Welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today was born in Munich and grew up in Vienna. He completed his first novel while still at the University of Vienna in 1997. He's won numerous prizes and is the author of works including Me and Kaminsky, Measuring the World, which was one of the most successful German novels of the post-war period. It's been translated into more than 40 languages so far, and Fame. His most recent book is You Should Have Left. Daniel Kalman, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you.
Born in Germany,
yes.
Grew up in Austria.
Yep.
Are you German? Are you Austrian?
I'm technically both. I have both passports. And as I like to say, the difference between Austria and Germany, the cultural difference is just not big enough for a decent identity crisis. So you can have both passports and live without having to really decide what side are you on.
Mm-hmm. Your parents, your father a director and your mother an actress. So were you brought up in a kind of theatrical world?
Yes, absolutely. There were actors all around when I was a child and in my parents' house. And came to visit, and my father was working at a theater, and I spent a lot of time there as a child, and I saw plays he was directing. And I always felt, when I started writing, I felt theater is my father's field. That's not really for me. And then a few years ago, I discovered that it is actually for me. So I started out as a novelist, and I kind of found, and I still write novels, but then I also... Only after a while I found the courage to also write for the theatre.
And of course, in your most recent book, You Should Have Left, the main protagonist is a screenwriter.
Yes, I did a little bit of that. And in the book, I'm making fun of that a little bit. Not because it's a bad thing, not at all, but it's the most dry and technical kind of writing. Also because if you look at a script, a film script, it's never a pleasurable thing to read because it's not meant to be. It's very technical. It has numbers in it. It has those short descriptions of places, and then you have dialogue and then again short descriptions. It's an unpleasant object, a screenplay. So it was fun to write about and to invent a writer. The whole book is that writer's notebook. So it has pieces from his screenplay he's working on in it.
Which suddenly cut off. I love that.
Yes.
He's been interrupted and you just
yes.
You stop in the middle of a line and then carry
yes.
on.
Because it is his notebook. So yeah. I wanted the book to have, of course, it can't be too much like a real notebook because you wouldn't want to read anyone's notebook. It's just unreadable. Your notebook would only be readable to you. So it had to be readable. But at the same time, it should have the feel of actually reading a person's personal notebook. And so I used this device with the cut-off sentences. For a while, I even thought about maybe writing in sentences and then cutting them, just drawing a line through them, cutting them out. But then again, I felt like that would be too much of a strain on the reader. But I did stay with the cut-off sentences, and there are a lot of them.
In terms of being a real-life screenwriter, how different is that then from writing a play? Because presumably you've got to think in that dry way.
Yeah.
Is it as unpleasant to write as it is to read?
No, a play is not... That's the difference between plays and scripts for movies or TV. A play is not unpleasant to write because it doesn't have those strict rules of format. The format it has to be in, you don't have to put in all those numbers and you don't have to use with a screenplay, you have to use this program Final Draft. With a play, a stage play, you're really free to write it whatever way you want. And I really like to read plays, whereas I don't like to read a screenplay.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to those first plays
yeah.
and the first influence of your father growing up in the theatre, tremendously
yes.
creative environment. And as you say, you felt that perhaps theatre wasn't for you because, of course, that was territory he'd
yes.
already claimed. How did you get into writing then?
Well, by reading. I think that's the truest answer to that. I was one of those children, and I think that's one of the few things all writers have in common, that they were children who loved to read. And I read all the time. I just loved books. I was reading, I was obsessed with reading. And most people, I think that's really generally true, most people who are really obsessed with reading, at some point they start to write something. And then the difference between people who become writers and people who don't, who just go on being readers and do other things in their life. The main difference is that people who become writers, they finish the thing they started. and the others don't. And I think that's all there is to it.
I'm interested to talk a little bit about the German literary scene before we go into your works, because your novels are actually on the school syllabus in Germany.
Yeah, I feel very ambivalent about that. At the same time, I'm proud and I feel it's kind of strange and a little bit dreadful. But yeah, Measuring the World is on quite a few school syllabi. Yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you find it odd then that people are kind of doing deep analysis of the text? Do they come up with stuff that you didn't really intend?
Well, yes. And also what I find most disconcerting about this in regard to Measuring the World is that the book was meant and also usually read as a parody of the kind of serious German erudite novel. And it's a comic novel. It's a comic novel about serious Germans. And the rest of the world understood this very well. And a lot of people in Germany understood it. But now I have this phenomenon of very serious teachers giving this book to their children to learn from. And I really, in a willfully irresponsible way, I was mixing facts and fiction. And I always kept saying when people asked me, I said, trust nothing. You shouldn't trust this book at all. And so that's what I mean. I am proud that they're teaching my book at school. And I think by now there have been written about 10 books about this book, some of them very serious. But the truth is also, if I were a teacher, this is not the book I would choose. And I'm not saying that to say something funny. I'm very serious about that. I don't think it's such a great idea, but it still makes me proud.
Well, I mean, so I don't want to fall into a kind of perhaps slightly racist stereotype, but isn't it a bit of an oxymoron, a German comic novel?
Yeah, it is. And it's not quite true that there's no funny German literature. There are funny German novels. I know it sounds like an oxymoron. It isn't quite. But the thing about Germany and humor is that humor always was never held in high regards in Germany. It was considered a low and vulgar thing to be funny. And you can find that even in Goethe's letters. He says verbatim, he says humor is for people with bad character. And so the problem with Germans and humor, of course, there are a lot of Germans who just don't have a trace of humor, but then also there are a lot of Spaniards who don't have a trace of humor. There are cultures holding humor in high regard, like French culture and, of course, British culture. And then there are cultures where humor isn't a thing people really like to elevate to the level of cultural importance. And that was always a big problem in Germany, that people who were funny weren't taken serious in a cultural way.
Mm. Your novels are also known for being philosophical. And of course, your first book came out while you were studying philosophy at the University of Vienna. Tell me about that decision and then the philosophical thread that runs through your work.
Well, I was always interested in ideas. It's something I couldn't imagine living without thinking about ideas and their consequences and where they come from all the time. And I know it doesn't have to be like that in literature. There are writers who aren't interested in ideas at all. And some of them write wonderful books just about human beings and their adventures and what happens to them or what doesn't happen to them. But in my books, also in my plays now, to get me energized in writing, to make it really interesting for myself, it needs to be about ideas in some way. Maybe that's a German thing, but it's just, yeah, I've written enough books now to just accept my limitations or just the scope of my interests. What interests me and what doesn't?
What does interest you?
Well, of course, the first thing is always human beings. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't become a novelist. Otherwise you wouldn't be a fiction writer. Human beings are the center of literature in any meaningful way. Then also I am really interested in, for example, science. That's what made me write Measuring the World, a comic novel about scientists. And I am extremely interested in contemporary science. So I do read books or try to read books about quantum physics all the time. And I'm absolutely fascinated by how incredibly strange our world turns out to be. Mm. And I cannot imagine not being interested in those adventures of the mind that are going on right now. But I'm not saying that's something literature has to cover. It's just something I'm interested in, and I find it's very important to write about the things you are interested in.
Absolutely. Your second novel, was that a big hump to get over?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a small novel that has... the novel after the success, because Measuring the World wasn't my first novel. That was only the first novel that became really successful. Mm. My first novel hasn't been translated into English. It was a fictional autobiography of a magician called Beholm's Vorstellung, Beholm's Magic Show, which I'm still very fond of, but it has been translated into a few languages, but hasn't been translated into English yet. So I wrote a few books before the book that became so successful. And in retrospect, it was very good, because then when I had a book that was a massive bestseller, well, I had other books. So I felt like I had a basic idea of what a writer does and how to just go on. Mm. And... yeah, of course, going on after success is very difficult, but also going on after failure is very difficult. Going on is usually difficult.
What do you think, because presumably you think that all your books are good, what do you think that tips that balance between bestseller and not? What grabs the public in a way that with that book that didn't with your previous work?
I don't really know. And I think you cannot plan for that. And I think it was exactly the right mixture of topics and also characters at the right moment. Well, it is a funny novel, as far as I know and as far as people tell me. So the fact that it actually made people laugh a lot was very helpful to make it successful. And then also some of the topics like science, like what does it mean to explore the world? What does it cost us to explore the world? What are the dangers, but also what exactly is the beauty in it? In just keeping to ask questions, not just believing something, but keeping to ask questions and doing experiments. So the whole idea of doing science, for some reason, it must have been a moment when a lot of people were interested in those things. But again, you cannot plan for that at all. And some of it might just be coincidence that the right people recommend a certain book at the right moment on TV. And if those people don't recommend that book because they're sick and stay at home, then you might not have the same amount of bestseller success. So part of it is just completely coincidence too, I think.
I mean, let's not underestimate just how successful you are. The Guardian says a literary wunderkind already being compared to Nabokov and Proust. We have people like Ian McEwan talking about your book, F, What a Strange and Beautiful Novel, hovering on the misty borders of the abstract and the real. We have The Telegraph telling us that your world is fully convincing whilst being philosophically challenging. You have a hypnotic effect, seducing us with storytelling, provoking us to find meanings of our own. And there's just praise and praise and
praise. There were also bad reviews. There were also some.
Well, but what about that bringing celebrity? Because, of course, you've written a book called Fame.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, that was the book after the big bestseller. So, and of course, I found it hard to go on writing after the bestseller, and I had to find a way to go on writing. And what I did was I tried to make myself understand that the best thing about a big bestseller is that you do not have to have another one. You do not have to repeat it. It's a psychological trap to think that if the next book is not a bestseller, then you did something wrong. If you are a serious artist, then the point of a bestseller is that that was all the best-selling you needed. You can just go on and feel free now to do other things. And one of the things actually I did, because now I felt freer to explore, was to write for the theater. And another thing was I wrote a very experimental novel called Fame, which is actually, I would have liked to publish it just as a collection of short stories and to see how people reading it would from story to story kind of understand that this is actually not a short story collection, that the stories are connected on a deeper level than most interlinking short stories are. But then I did call it a novel in stories. But the point of that story collection is that what's usually called interlinking short stories. So there are characters in people who are the main character in one of the chapters come back as minor characters in other chapters. But the thing I really tried there and the thing that felt very new to me was there's also a fictional writer in the book. And some of the stories are actually not my stories, but his stories. So he reacts to things that happen to him by inventing stories. And those stories are in the book, too. So I try to do interlinking stories, not just on the horizontal, but also on the vertical level, that some of the stories are invented by characters of the other stories. That was the experiment here.
Which, of course, you use to a degree of in your latest book, too.
Yes.
Tell me about F, because that has had so much praise. That came out in 2014.
Yes, in English. In German, it came out 1 year before that. The English translation came out in 2014. It's kind of a experimental take on the family novel. That's why it has the letter F as its title, because F stands for family. It's also the first letter of the family name of the four brothers it's about. And it's about a family of con men. Three brothers, and they're all con men in very different ways. One is an investment advisor who has kind of Bernie Madoff style, lost all the money of his clients. And it's just he still has a nice life. He has a house, he has a car, he has people working for him, but he knows that in a few weeks all that will be gone because he will be in prison and people will know that he was a bit fraud. But for the moment, he still enjoys his life, or tries to, because it's driving him mad. And he's literally mad. He's seeing things that aren't there and hearing voices, and he's getting, he's mad. And his brother is a priest who doesn't believe in God, which is a completely different kind of con man, but also kind of the initial con man. And their brother is an art dealer who is secretly an art forger. So he invented the painter whose estate he's in charge of. And he's doing all the paintings himself. And he's not a bad painter. So he's not, strictly speaking, an art forger, actually. He forged an artist. The art is real, but he forged the artist. The book takes place in just one day in their lives and follows their intersecting ways through the city on a very hot summer afternoon.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. As you said, this was translated into English, and I wonder how you feel about your translation. Obviously, your English is excellent. Why do you write in German?
I couldn't write in English, so thank you for saying my English is good, but it wouldn't by far not be good enough to write literary prose in English. I can write emails in English, and even there, I sometimes have to pause and think, or maybe change my opinion on something just because I don't find the right word. But I couldn't write literary prose in English, so I can only do that in German. And I always worked very closely with my translator, Carol Janeway, who sadly died a year ago. So I have a new translator now who also translated my new book, You Should Have Left, Ross Benjamin. Yeah. And I miss Carol a lot because she was also a very close friend. But I really enjoy working with Ross.
So what's your process with him? And because, of course, you, as we've discussed, can speak English. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can read your book then in translation and see how close it is to what you originally meant in German.
Yeah, well, with Carol, it was her condition to translate me, because she was a publisher at Knopf, and she only translated books she really liked for her enjoyment, because she enjoyed doing translations. So she said she would only translate my books herself if I would be available to then discuss all questions and to look at her translation and tell her exactly where she got it right and where maybe she didn't get it right. So that was a very interesting work process, of course, and I was very involved. With Ross now, he's a professional translator, I mean, in the way that that's his job, that's what he does. He doesn't have a job on the side like Carol did running a publishing house. And his German is absolutely flawless. So he does have a lot of questions, which I'm happy to answer. But his German is so good that I feel like maybe he just asks me to because he feels like he should, or feels like a polite translator just asks questions. Also, I'm slightly afraid of him because he's used to translating classical writers. He did a beautiful translation of Hölderlin's Hyperion, and he's currently doing a new translation of Kafka's Diaries. So I always feel like I'm not quite up to the standard of the writers he's used to. But he doesn't say that. He's very polite.
But your translation language is far beyond English, and presumably you can't then go and check.
No, English is the only language I can check. I can read some French, but not enough to really check on a translation. So anywhere else, I have just to accept whatever the translator comes up with.
Yeah. Let's talk now about your play, because you're in London at the moment because you've got a play on, and it's called The Mentor.
Yes. It has been translated by Christopher Hampton, which is scary to me in a different way, just because Christopher Hampton is one of the
giants, isn't he?
Yes, one of the giants of writing plays in the English language. So that's also scary in a different way. It's a wonderful, wonderful translation, and the actors love it, and I love it. But of course, as I said, and I've even written that in a program folder, it is slightly scary to be translated by someone who is arguably a better playwright than you are. But it's a great, great honor, and I'm very grateful.
And the show's on at the Vaudeville Theatre here in London.
Yes, yes. It's at Vaudeville. It started in Bath, at the Theatre Royal in Bath. It went so well there. Also, thanks to the wonderful actors, starring F. Murray Abraham, who's just incredible. But it's a wonderful cast. All of them are just incredible. And so it transferred to London. It's kind of the most, I think it's the most glamorous thing that ever happened in my life. I can't believe it. I'm not joking.
Finally, let's go back to your latest book, You Should Have Left. It's a very small book in size. It's huge in terms of just how thrilling it is. I mean, you've been compared to Stephen King, for instance, a more literary version of Stephen King.
I have to say, it is a short book, and it was planned as a short book. So I've been writing a long novel for the last 5 years, which I just finished. And I wrote this book at a certain point. I took a break from the long novel and wrote this as an entertainment for myself on the side, a scary entertainment. I always wanted to write a really scary ghost story. And that is my version of a scary ghost story. And so it's not a novel. It's a novella. Or whatever you want to call it. But it is meant as a short, scary tale. And I think there is a reason why scary tales, the best of them, are usually short. Because something about the metaphysical horror story makes it tend toward shortness, like 100 pages or a bit more.
Yeah. What are you working on now?
I'm thinking about writing a new play. I'm currently editing the long novel, another historical novel, which I just finished. Which is the longest thing I've ever written, which is going to be published in the fall in German, and I think in English a little bit more than a year after. And right now I'm so thrilled by seeing F. Murray Abraham do my play and being so wonderful in it, and one of the great actors of the world speaking my lines, that I think of asking him whether I could write another play for him, whether he would be interested in that.
And that must completely change the way you write the play if you already have the actor in mind.
Of course, but that's the best thing about writing plays, that if you have an idea of who's going to do it and where under what circumstances, that it influences what you're doing. So you're always kind of in contact with the real world of real people and physical objects and the real theater that's going to put on your play. That's why I'm doing theater, because this is such a thrilling experience after writing novels for, well, close to 20 years now, where you can do anything, but also you're in a kind of a space detached from the real world. Whereas in the theater, you actually deal with real people and what they tell you and what they want to do and what they don't want to do actually then changes what you write. I love that. And I think if you don't love that, then don't write for the theater.
Finally, you now inhabit your father's world. How does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting. Not quite. My father was a director. I couldn't direct. I'm not going to try. I know I would be terrible at it. But it feels good to go towards your parents' world or to enter them at a certain point. Maybe, I mean, I'm 42 now. So I just read Sigi Jung, the great psychoanalyst, said that 40 is the age where if things go well, you are mature in a certain way. I don't know whether I'm mature, but in a way, entering the world of your parents at that age is maybe a step towards maturity, and it might not be the worst thing.
Daniel Kalman, thank you so much for coming in to speak to me. I am so pleased to have discovered your work, and I hope that everybody listening will rush out and buy all of your books, because they are absolutely worth reading. Your latest is You Should Have Left. It's published by River Run. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of George McDonough, Hunter Charlton and Helena Durit. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.